Christ in Every Word, a podcast of the Concordia Bible Institute, housed on the beautiful campus of Concordia University, Wisconsin. This is your opportunity to read, mark, learn, and inwardly digest the sacred scriptures with me, Dr. Brian Gurman, assistant professor of theology here at the university and the director of the Concordia Bible Institute. Vanity of vanities. Everything is vanity, so there's nothing better to do than eat, drink, and find enjoyment in your toil. These are some of the phrases that we've been thinking through in our study of Ecclesiastes, Kohelet, the gatherer, the assembler, the preacher, as he is sometimes translated. Last time we took a look at what is probably the most popular part of Ecclesiastes, the first part of chapter 3, the poem there that talks a lot about time. For everything there is a season and a time for every matter under heaven. Time to be born, a time to die, time to kill, time to heal, and so on. We notice here that a lot of this is just, boy, this is just in my mind straight out of the New Testament. This is these are the Beatitudes, these are the teachings of our Lord. This is not some sort of primitive B.C., old, ancient Near Eastern, ignorant kind of literature grasping at the straws of the meaning of life sort of stuff. This is quite profound, I think. Maybe some of the most central, most profound statements of the whole thing. Quite celebrated, I think that's quite right. So a time to kill. We noticed there, I leaned on Gregory of Nyssa, especially the 4th century guy. Just fascinating treatment, really. Probably so. The best part of what he wrote there is that chapter 3. He's got some sermons on Ecclesiastes and a time to kill, a time to heal. I mean, this is central to the faith. This is law gospel stuff. A time to kill the old Adam, a time to put to death the old flesh, the old Adam, and a time to heal, a time for the new man to daily come forth and arise who will live in before God in righteousness and purity. Just so fascinatingly rich in my mind, this poem here. And from that, it took up all the last, it took up the podcast time of the last episode. So, with that said, what's the game plan? Well, quite frankly, I just want to get through the rest of chapter 3. We got through that poem, and then, boy, here's the rest of the chapter, and we had to call it quits. So, I will read again. I think I did this last time, but I'll do it again just so that our listeners know what's going on here. I'll read it again, the text from Ecclesiastes 3, starting at verse 9. And we'll kind of tie together some loose threads that we started last time but were unable to finish. So Ecclesiastes 3, starting at verse 9 and following. What gain has the worker from his toil? I have seen the business that God has given to the children of man to be busy with. He has made everything beautiful in its time. Also, he has put eternity into man's heart, yet so that he cannot find out what God has done from the beginning to the end. I perceive that there is nothing better for them than to be joyful and to do good as long as they live. Also that everyone should eat and drink and take pleasure in all his toil. This is God's gift to man. I perceive that whatever God does endures forever. Nothing can be added to it nor taken away from it. God has done it so that people fear before him. That which is, already has been. That which is to be, already has been. And God seeks what has been driven away. Moreover, I saw under the sun that in the place of justice, even there was wickedness. And in the place of righteousness, even there was wickedness. I said in my heart, God will judge the righteous and the wicked, for there is a time for every matter and for every work. I said in my heart with regard to the children of man that God is testing them, that they may see that they themselves are but beasts. For what happens to the children of man and what happens to the beast is the same. As one dies, so dies the other. They all have the same breath, and man has no advantage over the beasts. For all is vanity. All go to one place. All are from the dust, and to dust all return. Who knows whether the spirit of man goes upward and the spirit of the beast goes down into the earth? So I saw that there is nothing better than that a man should rejoice in his work, for that is his lot. Who can bring him to see what will be after him? All righty. So there we have the rest of chapter 3 from Ecclesiastes. Again, just a quick review. The first part of chapter 3 was the poem, where you see this tension between how to respond to the enigma of time. I kind of like that word enigma. You know, vanity of vanities is how it's usually translated. But it kind of seems to imply that there's no meaning anywhere whatsoever. I kind of like the enigma of enigmas, because then there's this kind of incomprehensibility that you can't get on top of it, you can't master it. Not that there is no meaning, that's different. But that's this enigma of time. So anyway, the first part of the book and last podcast, we try to do some justice to that, is the tension between how to respond to the enigma of time. On the one hand, you can't figure out anything. And yet, at the other hand, there is some sort of pattern that's observable. God is working in time. Here, the sun, you know, up and down, and things like that. But to really be able to find out everything that's involved in this observable pattern, you have to kind of get outside of time. And how can you do that? Well, in this broken world, this finite world, we're not going to be able to do that. And so therein is the tension there. But to think through the tension, I think, leads to some of the most profound observations about the nature of God and humanity. So this sort of poem, there's a time to live and a time to die and a time to this and a time to... Well, I mean, that's sort of simple, straightforward. That's kind of obvious. I don't know how helpful that is. And yet at the same time, it's really quite profound. There's something about recognizing... I mean, even Proverbs does this. There's something about thinking through the seemingly contradictory that you're really starting to put your finger on some of the deeper questions of life, I think. What about raising kids? You know, you're going to see in Proverbs, well, you know, my son, don't despise my discipline. Or is it to give him some freedom, to let him, you know... You train him, and then he'll go the way, you know, he's free to kind of follow in the way of daddy's footsteps and things like that. Is it discipline or is it freedom? What do you do? Do you answer a fool? Or do you not answer a fool? And then you go to Proverbs, and in the very same chapter, very next verse says, well, don't answer a fool because you're going to become like him. What's the next one? Well, answer the fool so that he's put in his place. Well, which one is it? Well, that's the wrong question. But the point here is to posit some of these things. Is actually kind of, that's some of the deeper questions of life, I think, as to try to get, Ecclesiastes, this is what's pressing it, the irregular verbs chapter of your grammar and things like that. So anyway, boy, here's your intro, we're already cruising through. What gain has the worker from his toil? Again, that time stuff, I mean, we measure everything according to time, and yet we can't get on top of it. We're always pressed for time. Oh, I'm so busy. You know, and we measure how good we are by how we can get around time, how much we can get done in time. And we also judge other people by how well, you know, how much can you get done and things like that. And yet at the same time, we cannot force time around to bend and suit our purposes when it comes to the most important things in life. So there's this kind of restlessness, a holy restlessness, if I can draw on St. Augustine, about the enigma of time. Ah, my goodness, here we go. The poem is overflowing into this podcast episode. Oh, man, I'll never get to the end of this chapter. But maybe that's something to be, maybe there's something to be said for that poem. I mean, it's just fascinating. We need to do another, who's with me? Let's do a little bonus epilogue on that poem or something. Boy, all right. Anyway, yeah, verse 9. What gain has the worker from his toil? Well, that's the question. What is there anything left over? So we just had a holiday weekend. You know, you can clean up the yard a little bit. You're satisfied in your work, whatever you did. Is there anything enduring, lasting? What's left? You get a moment of satisfaction, and then, hey, you know, the grass is going to grow again, or it's on to the next thing, or, hey, you know, it's a school night. You're up early teaching class, whatever you're doing. I mean, that was me this morning. Hey, let's get going. We got more things to do. So what is left over? Is it just busyness that God has given the children of man to be busy with? That's kind of the question here. But listen to this. This is a strong confession. He has made everything beautiful in its time. This guy we call Kohelet, Ecclesiastes, this is not just some guy despairing of all of life and there's no meaning anywhere and this sort of thing. There's something quite profound about God working within the confines of time to pull off purposes that are quite beyond it. And that's the thing that drives you nuts. He has put eternity into man's heart, yet so that he cannot find out what God has done from the beginning to the end. You see what's going on here is that we have this sense, albeit broken, albeit depraved, albeit tainted, albeit suppressed, perhaps, to varying extents, this sense of something bigger than the self. This is huge. On the one hand, it's a beautiful thing. We have eternity heading our way because of Christ and what he has done for us. And that's a. But on the other hand, though, the tension therein would be that the gift of eternity could also be the notion, the wherewithal of eternity, I should say, could also be a terrible burden from a particular perspective. That's why, I mean, people are driven to despair all the time because of, you know, the meaning of life and wrestling over these deep questions, and yet not having, again, the gospel as the sort of climactic fulfillment and satisfaction for all these deeper questions. So it ends up driving them nuts. But again, what is it? Why even care? Why be driven nuts, even if you don't want anything to do with the faith? Why be driven nuts about questions like the meaning of life? Why be caught up in purpose or telos, the goal, the end result, why? Why care about the why? What is it in humanity that's driving them nuts? Even when, again, apart from faith, apart from the gospel, just to say, let's think through these deeper questions of humanity. He's put eternity into the heart so that there is a restlessness there for everyone. And again, this is a profound kind of restlessness, the kind of restlessness that indeed drives people into deep despair. And something most certainly to be aware of as we speak with people of whatever confession. I perceive that there is nothing better, yeah, in light of that, than nothing better than to be joyful and to do good as long as they live, also that everyone should eat and drink and take pleasure in all his toil. This is God's gift to man. Again, this the eating, drinking, toiling as God's gift. This is something we've talked about before. Kohelet's going to repeat it as we move along, but here again it is repeated. Eating, drinking, and toiling. This is not just some slapstick sort of response, eat, drink, and be merry. There's actually something quite profound in eating and drinking, receiving from God those gifts, knowing our place in the bigger picture, and also finding enjoyment in toil, even though it doesn't last. But knowing all the while that there are deeper, higher purposes involved when our toil takes place. That is to say, when enjoyment happens, it is truly a gift of God. We have that sense of it, and yet we can't capture it. There's no yitron, this leftover, to be the remainder that we can encapsulate it and lock it and control it and do whatever we want with it. Again, this is quite profound about the nature of work. I mean, work is so closely tied to the image of God. Again, he creates mankind. He creates Adam and says, go work in the garden. It's already perfect. Well, work because I work. You're going to reflect me. So work. I mean, that's why you can't be bored. Oh, I wish I had something to do. What is it that just can't be bored? And yet, in a broken world, this work is also burdensome. You'll thorns, thistles, and the sweat of your brow. You'll eat bread and things like that. And yet, but not so much that it loses all the purpose. Again, this is Ecclesiastes. Work has everything to do with what it means to be human and made in God's image. And yet it's also very burdensome in light of the fall, and yet not so much so that it loses all of its purpose. Why? Because eternity is in your heart, and work has this profound sort of satisfaction involved in it. Now we just work to consume things. We're in a culture of consumption, so they say, and things like that, which is a lot different than asking about purpose and end result of work and how our toil and how our vocation is tied to much bigger and more lasting and more enduring and more meaningful purposes. I'm looking at the clock. It's about that time. Yikes, we got a lot of verses to go still. So yeah, we're going to have to, let's just take a break and think about it on the other side.
We'll be back in just a moment to the Concordia Bible Institute podcast. In the meantime, I'd like to have you consider this question. What is most important in higher education? How do you prioritize all the knowledge to be gained at an institution of higher learning? Concordia University, Wisconsin, located on the shores of Lake Michigan in Mequon, Wisconsin, just north of Milwaukee, is an institution that is committed to excellence in learning, but at the same time realizes that excellence in itself is insufficient without development in vocation. We believe that God works through our vocations, our callings, in order to serve the needs of those around us. The mission statement of Concordia University puts it this way: Concordia University, Wisconsin is a Lutheran higher education community committed to helping students develop in mind, body, and spirit for service to Christ in the church and the world. You can learn more about the over 70 programs offered at Concordia by visiting the website, www.cuw.edu. And if you're benefiting from our Christ in Every Word podcast, I encourage you to support this ministry by mentioning it to others and by offering your monetary support. Please consider supporting the Concordia Bible Institute by going to our website, www.concordiabible.org, and clicking on the contribute page. And now, back to the podcast.
Alrighty there, folks. We are back with our study of the rest of Ecclesiastes chapter 3. I'll promise I'll pick up the pace a little bit to make sure we get to the end of the chapter. But all these things are, this just is so profound. I just don't like this view of Ecclesiastes if it's some primitive, like dark, despair, depressing sort of thing. And then, boy, they're in the dark in the OT. And eventually we'll get to the New Testament. Jesus will come and we'll have talk about love, and we'll be in a much better place. There's something more profound about it than just sort of a ode to depression or something like that. It doesn't really have much more purpose. There's so much. I'm just looking at this next verse. I'll start right up again. I mean, whatever God does endures forever. Nothing can be added to it, nor anything taken away from it. I mean, this is Deuteronomy. This is the end of of Revelation. This is the end of this book, Ecclesiastes. Don't add, don't take. This is strongly traditional, strongly confessional stuff. Don't add to it, don't take. Anybody add these words? Don't. And same at the end of this book. Don't add or don't subtract. In Deuteronomy, the end of this book is, you know, be wise about these things. Be careful of the making of many books. There is no end. You know, it's kind of like, and a lot of earlier interpreters took that as a warning. Say, don't just be tacking on endless. Qohelet has covered the grounds. And so also in Revelation, these don't add or subtract the words of the prophecies of this book. You know, anybody does that, the curses are upon them and that sort of thing. Well, say, nothing can be added, nothing taken away from it. This is traditional confessional stuff. And it kind of takes up the first chapter and puts a theological lens on it. Like earlier, we've already heard this, nothing new under the sun, but this ties it all to God so much more closely that you just can't rip out a verse from chapter 1 and say, well, this is what Ecclesiastes all it has to say about this. Well, no, there's quite more. And then same with the next verse. That which is already has been, that which is already has been. This is, again, in that context of, yeah, there's nothing new under the sun, and yet at the same time, this is very, very closely to how God works in a purposeful and ordered universe. So there's much more to it than just going into despair, I guess. All right, verse 16, we're going to do this. I can say it's going to happen. Here we go. I saw under the sun, and this is, oh man, another one. Here we go. I saw under the sun that in the place of justice there was wickedness, and in the place of righteousness even there was wickedness. You see what happens here? Is that he's gonna say, well, what do you do? God will judge the righteous and the wicked. For there's a time for every matter and for every work. See this? There's a time for everything. See how it's coming through here? In now a much more traditional way. So there's wickedness, and that should be in the place of righteousness and vice versa. But Qohelet says, God will judge the righteous and the wicked, which of course is a very old school traditional confession. Psalm 1, you know? The wicked and the righteous, the two being kind of paralleled, Proverbs, all over Proverbs, of course, the righteous and the wicked, all over wisdom literature, and so also here. But you see the difference there is that, you know, that if you read this poem earlier in Ecclesiastes as if it's just some sort of, oh, despair, there's a time for this and a time for that, and who cares what you do? It's all, they call it like the deterministic kind of viewpoint. Well, you gotta do justice to what's coming on here too. And that is when he repeats the same thing. There's a time for every matter and for every work. Now, wait a minute. Before you can't just say that that's all about despair, because here it's a time for every matter and for every work, as in God will indeed be judge in his time and in the way that he works. This is exactly with traditional, confessional, I keep using the word confessional, but the old school Israelite confession here, that there's a time for every matter and for every work, and it's all in God's hands, and that he will judge the righteous and the wicked, even when you see the very opposite taking place. There is a time for their judgment to take place, and it's in God's time. That's different than just saying, well, who cares about anything? And God, you know, there's this wickedness in the place of righteousness. God doesn't really exist, and everybody's a free-for-all. Eat, drink, be merry. It's completely different. Here he's showing, again, but these traditional, I just don't see these being picked up very much. Kohelet has a lot of old-school wisdom in here. He has done the difference. He has done his homework. He has gone full circle. He knows Proverbs, but then he pushes it, and he challenges things, tests things. He explores tensions, and then he comes full circle, and he ends up saying, he goes on this journey, ends up saying things that are quite traditional in the end. But again, the pleasure is in the journey, and that's what he's doing for us as readers. He's going through this, and then inviting us to come along with him. And then there's, as scripture, it's quite a profound trip, I would say. But I guess that to bring that up is I don't really see these things being talked about much. The fact that there's all kinds of these traditional kind of dogmatic confession. I keep saying confessional, but I don't know how else to phrases that Kohelet is including in here to kind of indicate where he stands in the bigger picture. Otherwise, you treat Ecclesiastes like some sort of bumper sticker. You grab one verse, you slap it on a bumper sticker and say, hey, that's the book. And isn't the Bible weird? And let's try another book. It's totally different in the case of what Kohelet is doing here. I said in my heart with regard to the children of man that God is testing them. They may see that they themselves are but beasts. Okay, well, that sounds a little weird. That sounds a little odd. What happens to man, what happens to the beast is the same. One dies, so dies the other. They all have the same breath. All is vanity. All go to one place. Now, okay, we're going to have to get into some discussions here. What does he mean by this? Well, okay, all go to the same place. Again, he's looking at this in a very observational kind of way. It's a matter of epistemology. He's looking around and he's saying, it's not so much that he has these big questions about animals going to heaven or not and things like that. He's looking at it and he's saying, animals are a perfect illustration of death happening to all of us. On the basis of his observations, he can't know what's going to happen after death. This is said not so much to get into big questions about, oh, what about resurrection and life after the grave and the presence of animals and the, you know, the soul, who has soul and all these things. It's said more to the point of time and to order and to the way that things happen. And the fact that the certainty of death, it's 100%, right? We're all headed there. The certainty of death complicates things a little bit, right? In terms of what is wisdom in light of the fact that we all die? What is time in light of the fact that we all die? And again, you just, in his sort of observation, let me tell you what he sees, and he just says it straight up, the animals and the beasts, and that we're all going to the same place. Now, with that said, again, right after this, what does he say? All are from the dust, and to dust all return. Where do you get that from? Well, he pulled that right out of Genesis. I mean, again, this is a very confessional statement about what is... And the other thing, too, is that... So some people get kind of bothered about, well, what is he saying here? That there's no everlasting life? Are we not going to go to heaven and things like that? Well, no, he's making a point about the bigger picture of God's tensions in time, what it means to be human, and the fact that we're all going to die. What does that mean for meaning and purpose and enjoyment? If we're all going to die, what does that mean for the here and now? If we can't control anything, if there's no leftover, what does death do to complicate the picture? But he's not saying that, oh no, well, I'm so depressed that I'm just going to deny the afterlife and things like that. or start saying things about animals that just doesn't really fit with elsewhere in the Bible. Actually, I mean, you can even see this in the same way that he ends the book. I mean, Qohelet ends, you move to the last chapter and you take a look at chapter 12, you're going to say, and the dust returns to the earth as it was, and the spirit returns to God who gave it. I mean, he has a very clear understanding of the fact that the spirit does indeed go to God, be with God, and things like that. But again, he's making the point as to what this means, what death does to our life now. If you know for sure that you are going to die, 100% you will die, what does that do for your life right now? For your toil, for your vocation, for your all of these things, is there anything left over for time? How time is to be spent and what time means for us as frail, passing creatures. That's the question here. So to kind of push that, I saw that there's nothing better than a man should rejoice in his work, for that is his lot. Again, because of our circumstances, because of the time, the confines in which we live, of course, the time and the frailty of our flesh, because we're fleeting and things like that, yet we can still rejoice in our toil because that is God's lot. That is his gift to us, precisely because it's through toil that God, who is outside of time, has so chosen to work in and through time, through us, in the midst of time. It's precisely who God, who is above the controls, the sort of frailty, has entered and is doing amazing things beyond our acknowledgement, beyond our recognition, in the midst of brokenness. It's precisely the avenue through which God, who is the author of life, and therefore not confined to the brokenness of this world and death and the frailty that we just talked about, is able to and has so chosen to put on display the life-witnessing actions of the person and work of his Son, Jesus Christ, through those in whom he resides. So, no, of course, that there's no vanity about toil, and there's plenty of enjoyment there because there's all kinds of amazing things happening in, with, and through it, if I can put it that way. Or, if you prefer, I'll draw on the words of the Apostle Paul and put it like this. Be steadfast, immovable, always abounding in the work of the Lord, knowing that in the Lord your labor is not in vain. Well, that is just really quite a nice and tidy place to wrap up this podcast, and I'm going to have to go ahead and say that that's all the time we have for this session of Christ in Every Word. Ecclesiastes, I hope you're enjoying it. Hope you keep tuning in. It's a fascinating book, lots of fun stuff. Please consider mentioning this podcast to your family and friends so that they too can learn more about God's Word with us. The mission of the Concordia Bible Institute is to provide Christ-centered Bible instruction from distinguished experts who teach Christ in every word of the Old and New Testaments to strengthen faith and spread belief in the one true God. Again, if you benefit from this podcast series, I encourage you to consider supporting the Bible Institute by going to our website, www.concordiabible.org, and clicking on our contribute page. Until next time, I'm Dr. Brian Gurman, wishing you God's blessings in Christ Jesus our Lord.